Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to another scintillating edition of your favorite Saturday morning program, exclusively airing here on WEEB. I am Steve Woodward, and alongside me is none other than David Hensley. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone. Just for the record, I am not alongside Mr. Woodward. That would imply like we're lovebirds sitting on a love seat, but I am actually across the table staring him in the eye.
Yes, that's right. We are looking across the table from one another. But we don't have to reach across the aisle because we're on the same side.
Correct.
So in metaphorically.
Yes. Even though we're opposite of each other, we are on the same side. There is no doubt about that. Hey, a little break from tradition. Steve traditionally leads Public Enemy number one, but I'm going to lead it off. So today's Public Enemy number one, as you might imagine, is Tom, but not the Tom you think. It is none other than our local homegrown Tom Adams, county commissioner.
Yeah, because I was ready to jump in and say, oh, him again, Senator Tom Thom Tillis.
Yeah, well, you know, there seems to be a trend with Toms. First, there's Tom Tillis, then there's Tom Beto, now there's Tom Adams, who is, you know, Tom Adams has come out of the closet. It's very, very, very disappointing. Because, you know, we all gave him the benefit of the doubt. He's a good guy, you know.
Well, let's tell the folks who he is.
Oh, so Tom Adams, he spent his entire life his professional life as a lobbyist in Raleigh. He grew up in Southern Pines. Him and his sister, you might have heard her name, liberal activist Libby Adams Carter, former chair of the school board so Libby Adams Carter, Bruce Cunningham, and Helena Wallen Miller, they were the people who were on the school board, and they were the people who implemented the woke strategic plan, the decline in discipline, the decline in test scores, the overbuilt schools. That was all a result of Libby Adams Carter and her gang of flying monkeys.
And then gleefully advocated for masking children, closing schools, and making them be vaccinated.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So, look, I mean, you know, we all have relatives we're not particularly proud of, right? And, you know, in spite of Tom Adams being a professional lobbyist in Raleigh, like full-time for decades, and in spite of his sister being Libby Adams Carter, you know, we all gave him the benefit of the doubt. I certainly did, because, you know, he's a nice guy and he's never ever done anything against me.
And now he's elected, a duly elected member of the Moore County Board of Commissioners.
Yes, sir. And he just got sworn in this year, so it's been, what, 5 months? And it's very disappointing because, you know, a few months ago, he did some stuff that kind of made me scratch my head. But this last county commissioner meeting held this week, he really came out of the closet as a trans Republican. He is a full-fledged member of the uniparty establishment.
And that was Tuesday's commissioner's meeting up there in Carthage. Right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So let me detail what he did. So the Academy of Moore County, one of, like, it's literally the one, it is literally the sixth best, if I got this right, it's the sixth best performing elementary school in the state, or maybe the sixth best performing charter school. But it is a gem among educational institutions in North Carolina, and it does a great job. You know, offers school choice, and you know, just they're just hitting on all cylinders. And of course, conservatives love charter schools, right? Because we're for choice, we're for parental freedom, all of that competition. So the Academy of Moore went to the county commissioners. There was a state law passed last year, I think, that allows counties to loan money or give money to charter schools for school construction. And of course, the establishment public school advocates don't like that. But anyway, so the Academy of Moore properly went in front of the county commissioners asking for some sort of funding to help them build a middle school. In the course of the county commissioners apparently were going to table it, and then Tom Adams came out against the loan. So
as a lone voice.
As a lone voice.
No, a pun intended.
Yes, a lone voice. Yes, great, great pun. It went over my head. So he came out against it, and part of his evidence was he pulled out a list of school construction projects. And I think he said that Moore County Schools had, if I remember right, it was $672 million worth of unfunded stuff, which isn't true. But he started reading through a list of unfunded stuff and, like, you know, curtains for our stages, right? And luckily, Mr. Paserno, a fellow county commissioner, was, you know, familiar enough with, you know, what's happening in Moore County Schools.
Former chair, now vice chair.
Yes, sir. And Mr. Paserno realized that many of the items on Tom Adams' list had already been fixed by, you know, your school board, right? And so, first of all,
so in other words, they were not unfunded. They have been funded and they have been implemented.
Yes, yeah. Right. I mean, not all of them. I mean, sure, we got a bunch of stuff and, you know, yeah. We're going to address all our construction stuff. But here's the point. So Tom Adams was reading from an old list to try to justify shooting it down. Well, luckily, the county commissioners who were going to table it after Tom came out against it, they decide, oh, let's take it for action. And I'm proud to report that Moore County is going to loan with interest rate higher than they would normally. You know, Moore County has a lot of money in the bank, you know, reserves that they're holding for different stuff. And they're going to loan it to the Academy of Moore at a rate higher than they get from where they're required to invest it. So it's a good deal for the county. It's a good deal for, but the larger point is, where did Tom Adams get this expired list? And I got to thinking about it. That's the list that was in existence. It was the John Barath list. So first of all, it was overinflated in cost by 40%. That's just, you know, if you want to know the true cost of a project, take Mr. Barath's estimate and multiply it by 0.6. You'll be pretty close. But that was the list that was there when Libby Carter was in office. So it's pretty obvious that Tom is working with his left activist sister to try to torpedo our great charter schools.
That is quite disturbing.
Yeah, but it didn't stop there. Further, and also in the same meeting, in the meeting, he tried to shoot down funding for a charter school, a loan where everyone benefits. Then, without it even being on the agenda, he made a motion to reappoint Larry Cadell to the Sandhills Community College Board of Trustees,
whose term expires imminently.
It expires at the end of this month.
Of this month of June, yes.
June 30th, 31st, whatever.
Along, well, 30 days, half yes. September.
Right? Yes.
And there are two other seats that expire as well.
Yes, Helen
Probst-Mills.
Good riddance.
And Gary Evans.
Don't know much about him.
Gary's a good man, Republican, yes. conservative man.
So, no conservative. Look, the only people, let me say this, the uniparty establishment is desperately trying to hold on to their power, right? We took the school board and we fixed Moore County Schools. We took the county commissioners, right? We made appointments, you know, Department of Health and this and that. The remaining center of gravity in Moore County for the uniparty establishment at Sand Hills Community College Board of Trustees, and they're desperately trying to hang on to that. The only people who went for, and we don't have time to get into it, but the things that have happened on Larry Cadell's watch, you know, the illegal unannounced meetings, the implementation of DEI, the, you know, letting Dempsey not enforce HB2. I mean, it's just legendary. The only people who want Larry Cadell reappointed is the uniparty swamp. And so right there in one meeting, Tom Adams came out of the closet. He, as a trans Republican, he revealed himself as a member of the uniparty establishment. So therefore, none other than our local Tom Adams is public enemy number one.
And, you know, when it comes to these seats on the Board of Trustees of the college, you know, it's not only a matter of, you know, should somebody be reappointed because of their viewpoints and their track record. There comes a point where age is a factor. And as we have seen repeatedly, some of these uniparty guys don't want to let go.
Right, right.
And unfortunately, they don't recognize often that they're on the verge of overstaying.
Right. Go out as a Super Bowl champion. Don't be like what's his name and go down and play for Tampa and start embarrassing yourself, you know.
Or Joe Montana playing for the Kansas City Chiefs, or yeah. Brett Favre playing for the New York Jets.
Go out at your height. And look, I look forward to accomplishing on the school board what I set out to do. You know, I only wanted to do one term because of Levy and Holmes and their little coup. There was just unfinished business, so I ran for another term. But when I finish everything I want to do, and you know, everything's cool, I will happily set my pen down and pass my baton to the next person.
Yes.
But these people are bitter clingers. He's been on the Board of Trustees for, what, 30 years?
About, yeah.
20-plus years?
I can't imagine it. Of course, let's remind our listeners, and for the purpose of full disclosure, I am a member of the Board of Trustees.
Yes, you're an effective member because you critically think about what they say and ask questions.
But that being said, I will be more than happy to move along with my life after my 4-year term expires. I am not interested in a lifetime of meetings that run till all hours and deny me of my proper cocktail hour and my nutritious dinner. Yeah.
So you have to ask, and then we can move on. I'll just ask this rhetorical question. These people who get on boards and want to stay there for 20 or 30 years, you have to, and by the way, they do a bad job. You know, look, they get buildings named after them. They get all these perks. They get trips to Myrtle Beach. They take junkets to Las Vegas once a year. That's the crap they were doing. They, you know, meetings at Forest Creek and having, by the way, the food at Forest Creek is the best food in Moore County. But that doesn't mean that Sand Hills Community College should have their open meeting behind the gated community in Forest Creek being fed the finest food in Moore County.
That's a vestige of the now, thankfully, former Dempsey era.
But Cadell allowed all that. Cadell was the vice chair when all that was happening, the illegal meetings and all. Cadell needs to go, and the only people that would support him are the uniparty swamp. Anyway, so let's move on from trans Republican Tom Adams.
Let's move on. And you know, I kind of wanted to talk about the other Tom, Thom Tillis, who continues to stay on course for his political suicide mission. Now he is opposing Donald Trump's pledge to end taxes on tips. And Tillis now also has apparently a problem with another element of the big beautiful bill. He just can't get out of his own way. But you know, there's still time. We'll do that next week.
No, let's hit on this real quick. I mean, look, it's just a matter of time before Tom Tillis comes out for stomping on baby kittens and baby ducks. I mean, the guy's like political suicide. But let's talk about weird and unusual positions. Well, we're going to talk about it in brown water. Actually, the next topic, talk about stupid positions, right? Let's talk about brown water at Carthage Elementary School, right?
We'll go from the dark side of Tom Tillis to the brown water of public education.
Well, here's the tie-in. The central office has known that there was brown water in Carthage Elementary for at least 6 years, probably a decade.
You're talking about running out of the faucets.
Running out of the faucets, brown water. Running out of the faucets. And the, they've known about it for 10 years. And I'm like, look, I am the construction committee chair. We're no longer going to bury our head in the sands of this stuff. We're going to address this. We're going to address the potential contamination, Aberdeen Elementary. And there's just stuff that they buried their head in the sand on. So I was in a committee meeting two weeks ago, and we were talking about this. And the two other board members on the committee, Miss Calcutt and Miss Dahl, you know, I'm like, look, the water's brown. I pointed to numerous articles in the pilot where the pilot has pointed this out. The principal had a desperate plea saying, you know, the water's brown. And in spite of that, both Miss Dahl and actually both doctors, so in my committee meeting, Dr. Locklear, Dr. Dahl, and Dr. Calcutt, notice the trends, they were arguing against doing a $400 test of the water so that we could reassure the public why it's cloudy. You know, it's likely, I don't know, sediment, but if there's sediment, there's a leak, right? But the fact of the matter is, here's what they've done. For a decade, the central office has known about this water. They never, ever, 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 ever in a decade got it tested. Finally, a couple years ago, they put filters on the drinking fountains. You know, the drinking fountains and the spigots in the cafeteria.
That'll fix it, yeah.
But then they still didn't get it tested. I mean, look, if you had brown, and I asked this in my committee meeting. I said, look, you guys, this is absolutely ridiculous. Everybody in this room, if you had brown water in your house, so if you had brown water coming out of the tap in your house, would you do nothing for 6 years? Then without testing it, would you just put a filter on it and then just call it good? No, of course not. The first thing you would do is you would get it tested to see what's coming out of there. Then you would take appropriate action. It's interesting that the three doctors and the three educators on the committee didn't want to test the water. Isn't that crazy?
There's got to be an underlying reason beyond just being stuck on stupid, doesn't there?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to speculate, but I'll tell you what I did. After 6 years, 6+ years of stonewalling and misleading the public, after my committee meeting, I made a few phone calls. I called elected officials throughout Moore County, and I said, hey, we're not testing the water. Like, what do you mean you're not testing the water? I'm like, yeah. So after 6+ years of inaction by Moore County Schools, within 2 hours before my head hit the pillow that evening, I coordinated with fellow elected officials, and the Moore County Department of Health is going to exercise their jurisdiction. They're going to do water testing in every school in Moore County annually, and they're going to post the results. And oh, by the way, they're going to send the bill to Moore County Schools. If Moore County Schools would have worked with them, they would have got it for free. But you know, so the Moore County Health Department is going to do the right thing and test the water. The State Department of Environmental Quality is going to send inspectors down, and they're going to inspect Carthage's water supply, both at the wellhead and at the output. And they're going to do thorough testing for it to include forever chemicals such as PFAS. And then it's my understanding that legislation is going to be introduced into the North Carolina General Assembly next year, mandating testing of water yearly in every school and public school in North Carolina with the results published. And here's the point. The central office, through two superintendents, five school boards, has been dragging their feet and not coming clean with the public. 6 to 10 years, I got it addressed in 3 hours.
Doesn't that suggest that they're afraid of what they're going to find when they test the water? Right?
It's not the only issue that the central office has drugged their feet on and not taken. I mean, look at Aberdeen Elementary. It's a trend.
It sounds like they may be dragging their knuckles more than their feet.
You know, whatever. But anyway, but here's one other point about the brown water. This is the other point I made in my committee meeting is none of you all send your kids or your grandkids to Carthage Elementary where there's brown water. Your kids and grandkids go to schools where the water comes out clear.
Or out of a bottle, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. So anyway, you know, they're more than happy to send their kids, other people's kids, to F-rated schools, but they make sure that their kids and grandkids don't go to the F-rated schools. And they're more than happy to send other people's kids to a school that has brown water, but they don't have to drink it, and their kids and grandkids don't have to drink it.
Well, that's a very valid point, and I can't wait. I'm very anxious to find out what these tests tell us about the quality of the water. Is it merely WOC, water of color, or is it tainted water? Is it dangerous water?
You know, maybe, you know, I never thought of that. Maybe the brown water was part of Libby Adams Carter's drive to diversity.
there you go.
We got to have water of color.
That's right.
You're
on to something.
Lordy.
Well, I would be remiss if I did not mention that later in the program this morning, we will have a special guest, a very successful local business owner. His name is Luke Black. He is the proprietor of a fine dining establishment in Moore County called The Marketplace, which has been around this town for, I think, north of 40 years.
Well, the predecessor of that was the restaurant down Midland Road here.
Correct.
That his mother owned.
Exactly.
So it's a family tradition.
Then they moved over there to the off of 211 a number of years ago. But Luke will be coming in to join us later in the program and just talk a little bit about what he confronts as a conservative Republican small business owner in our community. And that will be our focus of our discussion. In the time we have remaining with Mr. Hensley this morning, did we want to tackle another school board issue that seems to be
the trend today?
Yeah, we might as well. Let's go all local today, which is good. So there's this bizarre, you know, this is almost like Alice in Wonderland stuff, this bizarre debate over the very simple idea that children in schools, in our public schools, should be encouraged to read a book and after reading it, demonstrate their comprehension of what they've read by completing a book report, by writing their own non-AI generated book report about the book they have just read. And yet the same highly educated members of the school board who you previously referenced are full-throated against this idea. And why would that be? Can you explain it?
I can't explain it because, you know, I, Miss Dahl, who
showed... Please, Dr. Dahl, please.
No, it's Miss Dahl. By the way, because of Miss Dahl's outburst, I am never, ever, ever calling anyone with a PhD in education doctor again. I mean, unless somebody is operating on my toe or something, unless they're a medical doctor, they right. are Miss, Mr., whatever. I am never, ever, not once, ever. Anyway,
correct.
So everyone can thank Miss Dahl for that. But Miss Dahl, she read prepared remarks, right? And in her prepared remarks, she kept talking about evidence-based. We need to do evidence-based this. We need to do evidence-based. But what's interesting is she provided statistics like this is taking 20% of educators' time, but she provided no evidence where she came up with those numbers. So she literally made up numbers while talking about evidence. So I sat there and listened to her, and I was surprised by, you know, Amy, I thought, was very intellectual, but I've discovered that she's not. She's only intellectual when she's reading from prepared statements. I mean, if you look back at all the things, all the times she spoke at the school board, she was just reading off a script, and that's what she was doing in this. And I was surprised at all the points she made. I was shocked at how easy they were to refute. whether it was a minor point or a big point. But she kept talking about evidence-based. We need to eliminate because it's not evidence-based. So I asked two questions. One was, well, the big one was, well, Dr. Locklear, since we implemented the book reports, have reading scores in Moore County schools gone up and up or down? And after a bit of fidgeting, Mr. Locklear answered the question and said, well, Mr. Hensley, you know, they've gone up.
Really?
Yes. So the evidence, Ms. Dahl, would suggest that the book reports are positive. So if you want to talk about evidence-based, let's look at the increase in reading scores since we implemented the book reports.
Well, is it possible that the issue with these book reports is that they're concerned that the teachers don't want to take the time to read them and grade them? Is that part of the problem?
Well, so the other argument that she made, which again easily shot down, she said this is taking 20 without any evidence. This is taking 20% of educators' time, and that's time that we could spend preparing for end of grade tests. That is the same Ms. Dahl who, when she was speaking in public speaking,
as a member of the general public, yes,
and frequently since she's been on the school board, she's raged against teachers having to teach to the test. Now she's saying they need more time to teach to the test. So, Ms. Dahl, which is it?
Yeah.
Do you want more time to teach to the test, or do you want us not to teach to the test? Her argument is hypocritical.
And it appears, much to my chagrin, that the school board is leaning in favor of voting for the elimination
of
the book reports.
That's the big disappointment. That's the big disappointment is Shannon Davis has 100% come out. She's going to vote to eliminate the book reports.
And she's the vice chairman.
Well, she ran as a conservative.
Yes.
But see, here's the thing. Shannon Davis is the perfect vice chair. She's the perfect vice chair because she does whatever the superintendent wants. I can't count the number of times where when we were engaged in debate and everyone would talk on a topic. And if you look, she never actually says anything. If she speaks at all, she just parrots what someone else says. But what she used to say until I called her out on it is she says, I'm going with what that guy wants, and she'd point to the superintendent. So look, the problem with Shannon Davis, she's the perfect vice chair because she does whatever the superintendent wants, and if the superintendent's recommending we eliminate the book report, so Shannon Davis is for it. She's completely betraying all the people who supported her. She is betraying the ideals upon which she ran, and she's a patsy for the leadership.
And now what's going to happen is the book reports are going to go away, and then we're going to find out in another year or so that reading comprehension has reverted back to its abysmal levels where they are now, which is what, like 25% or something?
It's
third grade, eighth grade testing.
That.
Yeah. Depending on.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Socioeconomic factors and whatnot.
But the point is, we need graduates who can't. By the way, Ms. Gephardt, this was quoted in the pilot. Ms. Gephardt, when we were discussing this a few months ago, Ms. Gephardt said, well, we don't really need book reports because she's in charge of our curriculum. She's a great lady. I have the utmost respect for her, but she missed the mark on this one because she said, well, we don't need book reports because there's other ways to do this. We can get we can have the students read a book and we can get them in groups and have them talk about it. Well, first of all, we need people who can convey their thoughts in written word. And we all know that's a deficit in the young people of today. People cannot express their thoughts in writing, and we need people who can do that.
Absolutely.
And then as Pauline Bruno pointed out, the problem with, you know, discussions on stuff is that not everyone participates.
No.
Is, you know, there's four or five young people who participate and everyone else sits there quietly. So those group discussions, young people have to express their thoughts at all. Whereas if in a book report, every single person has to be able to express their thoughts in writing. So all their arguments are 100% BS. I can't explain. I just think that they don't want any ideas outside of academia. You know, oh, you peons, how dare you, you know, come up with an idea on education.
Well, here's a book that the children will never be forced to read. It has been released this week by the former liar-in-chief in the White House press briefing room, Corinne Jean-Pierre.
Is she like captain of the USS Enterprise? Oh, no, that's Jean-Luc Picard.
She was the spokesmodel for the Biden regime. She now has a new book out. She's so desperate to sell it that she claims she's leaving the Democrat Party. Play clip one.
And the way that I see moving forward in this space that we're in right now is if you are willing to stand side by side with me, regardless of your political, how you identify politically, and as long as you respect the community that I belong to and vulnerable communities that I respect, I will be there with you. I will move forward with you. And that is, I think, so important. So this book, Independent, it's about looking outside of boxes, not just always being in a partisan stance. And how do we move forward together?
I can't even comprehend that she thinks that we're going to buy the BS that she's selling there. But after 4 years of her... Well, I guess it was not four years. It started with Jen Psaki.
Whose program on MSNBC got canceled. Not even the MSNBC crowd can put up with her.
And then she was replaced by Corinne Jean-Pierre, which affectionately known as Raggedy Ann. And she was perhaps one of the most vile spewers of propaganda in the history of the White House press briefing room. But that being as it may, she's gone now, and that's just a distant memory. And nobody's going to read her book. I can assure you of that.
Well. So look, you do not get a pass. You do not get to spew lies and outright propaganda and cover up the decline of a U.S. president. All the BS she said. You do not get to do that for 2 years and then get a pass. That's just not how this works. Secondly, I got to point out. I'm going to do a little ad hominem. Attack on her, which I rarely do. What's up with that music and that voice? I mean, that voice was like...
kind of creepy.
It was creepy.
Yeah.
It was... I wrote something down, but I don't remember. I can't read my own writing. But that music and that voice, it was just like weird.
It was sort of a strip club kind of...
No. What it was that arrogant Ivy League. You know what it is? She has a punchable voice. In that, with that music and that, who's the...
Come with me and as we break out of the boxes.
No, it was kind of like a New England John Kerry accent. You know, you can picture her sitting on the couch and... Well,
she was doing everything but smoking a pipe.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Anyway, so it's amazing. She even has a punchable voice.
Thank you, David Hensley. That was a great conversation on a variety of topics this morning. And now I'm happy to welcome... into our studio, a local business owner that many of you know and who is a friend of mine, Luke Black, the owner of The Marketplace. Good morning, Luke.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome, of course. We were chatting a few minutes ago about the genesis of your legendary restaurant, founded in 1980. Was that down on Midland Road, wasn't it?
Yeah, Midland Road, right next to Caroline I, between Caroline I and Ironwood. Yep.
And when did you all move to your present location?
End of 2011. We opened January of 2012.
Right. You've been owner-operator for about 5 years now?
Yep.
We were talking about just prior to the onset of the big pandemic,
the
right?
The plandemic.
Yeah. The scamdemic.
Yeah,
that's
January
exactly right.
1st, 2020. So.
Well, thanks for coming in. So what we want to talk about is, you know, these days there's so much attention given to these businesses, both large and small, who went down the woke path and went all in on the DEI. And of course, you know, we have this thing going on in the month of June that they call Pride Month, and many companies embrace that greatly, you know, including Target and others. And now, in very short order, there's been this massive backlash against them. many of them have seen the effect on their bottom line, and they're like, that's enough of the rainbow stuff. You know, we'll go back to just selling our products and making our customers happy and focusing on quality and those kinds of things. It's amazing what it takes to jolt people into their into reality. But on the flip side of that is your business, which I've watched over the years, and going back to the pandemic era, and I guess even before that, you have been very vocal in your support for conservative principles. You have been known to fly a Trump flag or two in front of and inside of your restaurant, your beautiful restaurant, over there off of Highway 211. During the pandemic, yours was an oasis of sanity, where there were actually meetings held among groups of people who were desperate to come together and figure out how we could overcome the lockdowns and the masking and all the nonsense, the social distancing. So tell us a little bit about what is it like to be a small business owner in a fairly sort of center-right community who is openly supportive of conservative values and what we might call full-blown patriotism.
Yeah, Christianity
and, yes.
And faith, that's a big thing for me. It plays a huge role in being able to not be afraid to stand up for what you believe in. But, you know, you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything, right? That's what the old saying is. So
that is the
I'm not going to fall for it, and it's my business, and that's why I'm in business for myself, is to be able to do what I want to do. I don't have a boss. I don't have to answer to anybody. So it's it takes a lot of guts, but it's just what gets me up in the morning, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't turn people away because they believe different.
No.
Their money is just as green as anybody else's.
That's right.
They want to complain and tell me how to run my business, and I don't allow it. And it seems to work.
Yeah, know? Yeah, it does. So what happened in, let's say, 2021, 2020 into 2021, when all these restaurants were doing nothing but carry out, and their employees were literally becoming hostile toward customers.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a couple of restaurants where I had wait staff yelling at me because I wouldn't wear a mask from the front door to walk 6 steps to a table
and take it off to eat.
Yeah,
for an hour or two.
And so, you know, you tried to be understanding. You wanted the restaurants to succeed. You didn't want to see anybody go out of business because of the cruelty of the lockdowns and the restrictions. On the other hand, you just said we're going to be a
haven,
a sanctuary, a haven,
yeah,
for those who just want to be normal.
Yeah,
how did that work out for you?
Worked out great. We put our heads down and did what we do. We stood up for what we believe in, and we grew our business in 2021 by 42%.
That's so fantastic.
Yeah. So the first year in 2020, I was getting my feet wet, learning how to be a business owner. When I bought it in January, had a great year. It was a great time of having people come in that were, you know, patriots or just human beings that weren't afraid, weren't believing the hoopla, if you will, of the left. The left media, the wokeism, and the you know, the fear, and we didn't have any fear. We were paying our bit. We had families to feed, employees that relied on us, and then we were the one of the only few restaurants that were fully open 100% the entire time. We called the sheriff, and we called Dan Forrest at the time when he was lieutenant governor, and you know they told me to walk the breakdown of, yeah, it's a class 2 misdemeanor. And I said, I told Dan Forrest's office, I said, so I'm okay to open then, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, you got to do what you got to do to feed your family. You know, right. I'm not going to say yes or no to you how to run your business. And, you know, and then Ronnie Fields was at all of our events. And, you know, he's a great guy. And he'll get the marketplace endorsement every time he runs, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that takes a huge role. You have people supporting you in our mostly red county.
Yeah. And I do recall, around that same time, there was an organization that grew up very organically called Freedom Matters NC.
Great group.
And we actually ended up going to Raleigh at least one time,
mm-hmm,
to participate in protests outside of the General Assembly to just get some kind of attention focused on the absurdity of these ongoing lockdowns, which were imposed gleefully by then-Governor Roy Cooper and his little minion, Mandy Cooper from the
health
department, the State Department of Health, and all of his preaching to us about trusting the science. Like, every time he said that, I just wanted to strangle him.
Yeah, but he's been saying that since he started, trust the science, and he's behind all of the nonsense that's gone on.
And now it turns out that the science couldn't have been more crooked if it tried.
Yeah, well, we had a little saying, we called it, my daughter at the time was 3, and we have a video of it I can find and show you. And she had a little toy doctor set, and she stuck it in her arm. She said, "No, ouchie, Fauci for me."
Got to train him young.
Yeah.
So despite the fact that, as we were saying, many members of our community were supportive of you and, in fact, saluted you for keeping your restaurant open and doing so in a very patriotic way and with signage out front to go with it. Mm-hmm. What kind of backlash did you face? I mean, there had to have been some people who went out of their way to be difficult and to be angry.
It started with I won't say names for the sanity's sake, but there was a local doctor who came in during COVID, during 2021, and he walked in, full restaurant, 16 tables were full, patio was full. He sat down with a group of 3 or 4 people, took his mask off and continued to eat and sit and talk for 2 hours without a mask on.
Mm-hmm. Two hours?
Yeah, two hours.
So he was fine.
In between two people, in between two tables. Mm-hmm. You know, it's unheard of for this guy, apparently. And he sent me a message on Facebook later saying how ashamed he was and disappointed and all this nonsense. And I simply replied with, "It's your right to believe that way, and it's my right to ask you not to come back." Mm-hmm. And he screenshotted that and blasted it out on Facebook. So I sent it over to our group of conservative cohorts, mm-hmm. and I said, "Have fun." And that kind of just took the ball rolling. And then, you know, that's when I really, really decided to stand up for myself and say, "Hey, you know, we're not going to let some doctor, or I don't care who you are, I don't care what your profession is, you can't tell me how to run my business. You're not paying my bills and you're not feeding my family." Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was other people like that, and there's a few people that still do it today, but it doesn't affect me, you know?
Of course not.
It's, you don't want those people, they're negative. This past election, when Donald Trump won the election, we had a victory party, and we gave 47% off to everybody that wore their Trump stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Completely line out the door, waiting to get in, and you had people backlashing you with, "How come you don't include everybody in this?" And I said, "Well, your side didn't win."
Yeah.
Elections, so you're welcome to come in, but you're not getting 47% off without wearing your Trump gear. It's a victory party.
Yeah, you're lucky we're not going to charge you double.
Yeah. What is this? Everybody gets a participation award?
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the woke NFL.
No, it is not.
We're not going to make the hats and sell them for a
discount.
That
is for sure. That is for sure. Well, I will say that I was amazed by the degree to which people would comply during that dark period of time. You know, I had one, I knew of a physician who, you know, had enough common sense in him, despite all the medical education, to know that these masks were basically not useful.
Yeah, and they're actually bad for you.
And yet, apparently he had a patient who was a lawyer who threatened him. He was going to turn him in. So what was he supposed to do? Have his practice shut down?
Sure.
And restaurants that serve alcohol were especially skittish about being caught, you know, not masking and or even being open, because they thought they'd get their liquor license pulled, which, you know, for some of them, that would essentially put them out of business if they couldn't sell the
classic fear-mongering,
the booze, yeah. And then, of course, what we saw in terms of education was completely out of control. And I remember going to some school board meetings, you know, where literally there were people who would show up and remove their masks, and they'd have these campus security drag them out of the room. I mean, it was like living in a third world, communist dictatorial country.
You gave a rent-a-cop a little bit of power.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what all those fear-mongers are doing during COVID, and still today, is they get a little bit of power. And as soon as it starts to go away, as it did at the end of 21 and beginning of 22, they started freaking out.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we no longer can point our fingers and scream at people and not be called crazy.
Right.
by the majority.
Exactly.
And, you know, which what we are, we're the majority.
That's true. That was proven as the long months went on and on and on. So tell me a little bit about, we'll shift gears a little bit.
Sure. And
I hear so much talk about people, citizens of our community who have lived here for quite a long time, and many of them are very sort of concerned about the population growth of this area, and with it the increased traffic volume, and with it the coming of these big box stores and the behemoth shopping center over there off of Morganton and other places, the gigantic apartment complexes that are going in that make places that we used to think of as kind of quiet and peaceful almost mm-hmm. unrecognizable. But from your standpoint, as somebody who's lived here a long time, how do you view that kind of growth, and how do you think we should adapt to it, I guess?
Well, unfortunately, we don't have a choice except to adapt to it.
That's true.
Unless you have enough money to fight them, but
or to move, to, yeah,
yeah, or to move, right? Yeah, and we don't want that. We want people to stay here, and I have a lot of pride in Moore County. My family's been here since 1720. In
really?
Moore County.
Just got here, huh?
Yeah, just got here, right off the boat, yeah.
Getting their feet wet.
Yeah. So they were here. We're 11 generations deep in Moore County, and, you know, it's kind of sad to see things like that, but it's convenient and it's easy, I guess. But I think convenience and easy is what is the demise of our generation, probably. You know,
right.
Technology's great, but everything's great in moderation.
Yeah.
But my great, 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 great grandfather Kenneth, his burial site is over at Target, and we the historical guild did a great job with setting it up and fencing it in and taking care of it, because they, when they built Target, they put 200 feet of dirt on top of his gravesite and moved it up the hill. So the gravesite's still there, the
really?
Original one. Yep, there's grass in a circle where you can see it, but they did a great job on honoring him and that kind of thing. So.
Are there multiple sites over there, or just him?
Just him.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's something.
Yep. So 1720, died in 1781.
Which was a long
fighting
life.
Fighting the good fight.
In those days.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have died if he wasn't fighting for what he believed in and got killed on horseback.
Literally.
Yeah, so he started it, and we're picking up the reins now. So.
Well, I understand the apple doesn't fall far from the tree then, I guess.
No. We had grandfathers that were, you know, the sheriffs of Moore County, and... Mm-hmm. We had the lumber yard, which is now Troy Lumber. They started that, and my grandfather started that with no money. He just had a piece of equipment, and Fred Taylor at the time, who was helped start the lumber company, he told my grandfather, and my great-grandfather, he said, "You clear the land, and we'll treat the lumber, and we'll split the profits," and that's how that went. Family dug the Pinehurst Marina.
Really?
Yeah. So we have a lot of pride in Moore County, and we like the way it used to be, but we just have to adapt, I guess, to the new way of things.
Yeah,
and keep doing what we can do.
Well, and I have to laugh. You know, about a week ago, I was out on Long Island in New York, and we had to get up early the morning that we were leaving, and drive west back toward the city and to the airport. And you know, it was like 6:30 in the morning, and it's a weekday, and even at that hour, the arteries leading from Long Island back toward New York City were jammed. It was already rush hour at 6:37 a.m. And it stayed that way all the way in till we got to the airport. And the whole time we were driving, I kept saying, can you imagine that people sit in a line 10 cars deep at our traffic circle and think that it's the worst part of their day? I mean, literally.
Yeah. That thing, they're talking about, you know, redesigning and doing those kind of things. Hell, it's been around since 1956, and people still can't drive it.
No,
I don't think redesigning it's going to fix that problem.
No, I think it's a very inexpensive, like $50,000 video tutorial.
Yeah,
public service type thing.
Make them take it when they renew their license.
Yeah, I'm not kidding either. It would be so productive to do that. And just to teach people the basic principle that yield
is
does not mean stop. Yield means yield. And that there has to be some flow. You have to be you know, you don't speed up in the traffic circle, but you don't also slow down. You just drive.
Yeah, you don't cut somebody off, but you get on out there and go.
And I think everybody also ought to be forced to go to some of these European cities where they have massive traffic circles.
Or go to the Jersey Turnpike.
Where you just close your eyes and dive in. You know, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's the way it is. Hey, we're speaking to Luke Black. He is the owner of a multi-generational family business that goes back to 1980. Actually, the dawning of the Reagan era. How appropriate.
How appropriate, right? For us, yeah.
He is joining us today here on Taking Aim. And we've been talking about some of the challenges of being a small business owner who has a conscience and a brain. And so how are you finding the second time around operating a business in a Trump economy? And as a business owner, are you worried about these tariffs that seem to terrify so many people, or do you think, as some do, that this is just what we need to do as responsible adults to end the trade imbalances with our they're not even partners, they're just our adversaries, really.
Right. We are their economy.
Yes, we are their economy.
If they don't pay the tariffs, we don't buy their stuff, who else is going to buy it?
Right, exactly.
So I think it's great.
But how's business under Trump 2.0?
It's great. It's up. We're up about 30% from last year. Catering business is up. People are happier.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they voted for him or not, there's more money in their pocket, and gas is cheaper. They can't deny that. And the no tax on tips for restaurants, that's going to be great.
Yeah, you know, we should talk a little bit more about that. But before we do that, I was going to ask you about food costs. Do you see them gradually stabilizing?
They're stabilizing, and we're very particular about our food costs and keeping it right at 30% or below. So you know, we go in and highlight things in red ink, and we have great sales reps with Sysco Foods and Performance Foods, and they, you know, take care of us, and we take care of them, and we have everything down to a science, and we just try to do what we can to survive,
right,
make money. But it's getting a lot better than it was the last 4 years. Cause I ran a business for the last 4 years under a Biden administration.
Right.
So I was involved when Mom owned it in the first Trump administration, and it was great. And then COVID was great. We grew,
mm-hmm.
Not COVID was great, but yeah, it was great, right, for us, for business,
right. Well,
you know,
just,
unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
you did what you had to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're getting back to that pre-COVID.
Yeah.
People are having parties and that kind of thing, and they're just happier. So it's great.
But so no taxes on tip. It seems like an idea whose time has finally come, and it's long overdue, I would say. Except for our North Carolina Senator, Tom Tillis, seems to have a problem with it because he thinks it's unfair to people who work in, let's say, hourly wage positions that don't receive tips.
Sure.
But tell us about the reality of employing people who work for a fixed hourly wage and then earn tips. What kind of a game changer will it be for them if they don't have to pay taxes?
Yeah, so it's huge. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday when you were eating lunch. And, you know, as far as it's great for employees because when they can claim their tips, which they already don't make a whole heck of a lot of money.
Right.
So to pay taxes on that little bit of money is excruciating for them. So they just choose not to a lot of times, I assume.
So you're pulling taxable revenue out of the economy.
Correct. And then as a business owner that owns a restaurant, no tax on tips means I don't have to pay tax on those tips, which I don't touch. You know, if you come in and pay with a credit card and put it on tip on a credit card, that money goes into our checking account as revenue. But we dole it out to the waitresses every day, so we don't touch that revenue. So if there's, you know, $70,000 to $90,000 a year in tips a year, that's money that saves us money to be able to keep those people employed. So it helps not only the business owners, and Tillis, you know, like Ron White says, can't fix stupid.
Yeah.
So so you know, him saying factory workers, full of factory workers, not paying taxes doesn't benefit that business owner like it does a restaurant.
Yeah.
Because, and the restaurant owner is the one paying a lot of taxes, not the waitresses and not the employees.
And I think that he used the example of people who work in manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, over time they have the prospect of their hourly wages going up pretty incrementally, whereas restaurant wait staffs, they don't really see big jumps in their
It's performance based, yeah. Which, you know, the factory workers that he wanted to talk about are they're like that too. So, but you know, they get bonuses and things based on the speed of their performance and their line work and that kind
right.
of thing.
So. Well, Luke Black, it's been great having you with us this morning on Taking Aim. We wish you continued success at the Marketplace, a great place for breakfast and lunch. Particularly love the chicken salad. It's among the best in the community. And I'm an aficionado on that topic, so I can say that authoritatively. Once again, you have been listening to another scintillating episode of Taking Aim right here on WEEB each and every Saturday at 11 a.m. We will see you next time.